Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Stay locked to 3CR.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh yeah.
Alternative news, analysis and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast on Tuesday, the 31st of March, 2026. And shout out to the radioactive show 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung, and in the studio joining us today, we've got Visa and Julia. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, and welcome back, Visa.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
in more ways than one.
Exactly, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I'm still arriving mentally, physically.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Always takes a while. You have been overseas.
Yes.
I understand. Yes.
Yeah.
That's
beautiful.
And so how are you? What are things that you're going to do to readjust into your daily life? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because I was away for three. So it's almost like most of March I was away. So I've missed out on like the transitioning stages, and it's kind of just, you know, jumping back into April. So yeah, I don't know. I bought soup yesterday. I think I talked about this before.
Soup season.
Soup season. Nice. Yeah. I'm like committed now. I'm like, yes, soup season. So I got my cheese. I got my soups. I'm ready to like hibernate and like, mm-hmm. Yes.
Probably not for today though.
No,
as we
not
were talking
today.
About before. I
yes,
think
it's warm. And I'm going to enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. But that's good. Like aspirational soup.
Yes. Yes. I know. Completely unrealistic with the weather forecast, but.
No, that's
you're
okay.
Prepared. You're prepared.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I think food as well is such a good way to like transition back into
or exactly.
between places. Before we go through a rundown of today's show, just want to let everyone know that today at 3CR is Trans Day of Audibility, which is really exciting. This is something that has happened for 5 years in a row now, and it's to coincide with the Trans Day of Visibility, or if you were at the rally on the weekend, Trans Day of Vengeance, which I love. Yeah. So today from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. there will be 8 hours of exclusively trans, non-binary and gender diverse programming, exploring the best and worst of the trans experience in the age of reaction. There's going to be discussion, there's going to be music, all sorts of programs. So make sure you keep it locked to 3CR from 10 a.m. First up, there'll be an exploration of the sustained attack on trans public life currently in the colonial motherland, as well as in so-called Australia. So this is looking at what's happening in the UK. The show is called Dispatches from Turf Island, and it is presented by Willow and fellow breakfast host Priya. So make sure you stay tuned to that. But before we launch into Trans Day of Audibility at 10 a.m., we do have our own breakfast show. So just to let everyone know what's coming up this morning, we will be listening to two speeches from the Trans Day of Vengeance rally that took place on Saturday, the 28th of March. And huge shout out to Monday Breakfast Hannah for recording these speeches. So at 7:15, we'll be hearing from Rory, who is part of Vixen. They're a peer support worker. And in their speech, they talk about something that we've chatted on the show about before, the new proposed laws in the city of Port Phillip, which will punish those sleeping rough by removing their personal items. And they talk about how this will impact people, especially First Nations and trans sex workers and unhoused folk. At 7:30, we'll be joined by Lucy Chinganya, who is the current University of Melbourne Student Union President, Hanson Scholar and Biomed student, and she'll be on the show to discuss the demands from various groups at Melbourne Uni calling on the institution to scrap its indoor protest ban.
And at 7:45, we'll be listening to, we'll have Nazanin, an Iranian feminist, in studio speaking out against injustice within Iran. And this is part two of an interview conducted 2 weeks ago. At 8 o'clock, we'll be listening to Jing Xuan Teo, who runs Amplify Bookstore, specializing in stocking books by BIPOC authors based here in Nam.
And finally, at 8:15, we'll be playing another speech from the Trans Day of Vengeance, this time from Slumby. And it's a really beautiful address to everyone there, weaving together struggles for trans liberation, but also anti-colonial struggles all over the world. And also in this address, she really encourages people to imagine and organize for community-run gender-affirming care. So a huge show coming up, but first the news headlines, and we'll be back with those in just a moment.
Some folks know about it, some don't.
These are the news headlines for Tuesday, 31st of March, 2026. Content warning, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples should note that this headline mentions the name of a deceased person. The coronial inquest into the passing of proud Noongar man Geoffrey Winmar began yesterday on Monday, 30th of March. Geoffrey was only 28 when he died after multiple police units, including the canine unit, attended his home on November 9th, 2023 to arrest him. He is one of at least 626 First Nations people to have died in custody since the 1991 Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. The inquest will run over the next 2 weeks before Coroner Sarah Gerbert. It is set to examine the planning of the arrest by Victoria Police, the events during and after the arrest, including police responses to Geoffrey's medical deterioration and the decision to cancel the ambulance, the use of body-worn cameras and the health care Geoffrey received at Box Hill Hospital, and whether it materially affected his clinical outcome. Ms. Winmar said no mother should have to navigate the coronial process, but the family had come to Melbourne because the systems meant to protect First Peoples had again failed. Until this country properly accounts for First Nations death in custody, and until those responsible for their care and are genuinely held to account, there will be more Geoffreys, more mothers like me, more broken homes like ours, she said. Vic Aboriginal Legal Services has invited the community to join them in supporting Geoffrey's family either at the Coroner's Court of Victoria or online via the streaming link shared on Victoria Aboriginal Legal Services socials. Also in the news, Iran's parliament speaker has accused the United States of plotting a ground attack despite publicly pushing for a negotiated deal as the US deploys thousands of military personnel to the region. Iran's Ministry of Energy reported power outages in the capital Tehran, its surrounding region and neighboring Alborz province on Sunday, following attacks on electricity industry facilities. The Farsi news agency reported later that the outages were being resolved. It was unclear whether the attacks were related to US President Donald Trump's threats to strike Iranian power stations and other energy infrastructure if Tehran did not agree to a deal to end the war. Trump extended his deadline by 10 days through April 6 as Washington presented a 15-point plan for peace that critics have described as maximalist. As the US-Israel war on Iran stretches into its fifth week, the Trump administration is also planning to send thousands of soldiers from the Army's 82nd Airborne to the region following a US Central Command announcement on Saturday that about 3,500 military personnel has arrived in the region on board the USS Tripoli.
In other news, Australia's states are split over free public transport as the war in the Middle East drives fuel costs higher, with Victoria and Tasmania waiving fares while New South Wales, Western Australia, Queensland and South Australia have ruled out following suit. Tasmanians and Victorians will be given a temporary fare reprieve in response to ongoing price pain at the petrol pump. But New South Wales Transport Minister John Graham said his state was keeping its powder dry for a crisis he warned would last well beyond a month, while South Australia said it was focusing on other cost of living measures. Queensland and Western Australia have also ruled out any fare-free months. Uncertainty and crimped oil supplies due to the Iran war have driven up costs and led to fuel shortages at some service stations. From today, Victorian commuters won't need to touch on their Mikey cards, with all public transport gates thrown open across the state's train, tram and bus network for the entire month of April. The move was welcomed by Victorian Farmers Federation President Brett Hosking. Every commuter who leaves their car at home frees up fuel for the essential time-critical work that keeps Victorians fed, whether that's ensuring livestock are fed and cared for or getting crops in the ground, he said. Finally, in the headlines, Israeli police have prevented Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, from entering the Church of the Holy Sepulchre to mark Palm Sunday Mass. The Catholic Church said on Sunday that Pizzaballa and Francesco Lillepo, the official guardian of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, were both prevented from entering the church. As a result, for the first time in centuries, the heads of the church were prevented from celebrating the Palm Sunday Mass at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the statement said. This incident is a grave precedent and disregards the sensibilities of billions of people around the world who, during this week, look to Jerusalem, it added. Israeli police said all holy sites in Jerusalem were closed due to safety concerns amid the United States and Israel's war on Iran. During the Muslim month of Ramadan, which is also coincided with the war, Al-Aqsa Mosque was also closed to worshippers. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, the 31st of March. You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Trans Day of Audibility returns to 3CR for its fifth year running. 8 hours of wall-to-wall transgender programming, featuring live music, lived experiences, and dispatches from the front line in the war against reaction. Tune in from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, the 31st of March. 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM. 3cr.org.au, 3CR Digital.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from SoCalled Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalization intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM, or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
abolition,
anti-racism,
sex worker rights,
staff liberation,
disability justice,
anti-imperialism,
decolonization,
an end to borders,
workers' justice,
and so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. This morning we'll be playing some speeches from Saturday's Trans Day of Vengeance, which took place outside the State Library of Victoria. Some of the key demands from individuals and groups organising this event were accessible gender-affirming care for all, cops and Zionists out of pride and no pride in detention. First up, we're going to hear from Rory, a peer support worker at Vixen, who speaks about the City of Port Phillip's proposed law changes that would give local officers the power to remove personal equipment and how this would impact those sleeping rough in the community, but especially First Nations and trans sex workers and unhoused folk. Here's Rory.
First, of course, I want to acknowledge that we are meeting here on the land today of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I want to pay my respects, and also the Bunurong people. I want to pay my respects to elders past and present, pay my respects to my own elders and ancestors, and to any other First Nations people who are here today. Sovereignty never was ceded, never will be ceded. The genocide here on this land is ongoing, but so is First Nations people's connection to country, to culture, to each other, to our law and our land. This always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I'm Rory. I'm a First Nations queer and non-binary trans person and a sex worker. And yeah, I now work in peer support at Vixen, which is the peer organisation for sex workers in Victoria, run by sex workers for sex workers. Right now, as a trans and gender diverse person, it feels like we are a community caught in the crosshairs of so much stigma, escalating hate and repression. Through our phones and word that we share with each other, we're witnessing the pain of our siblings overseas, where healthcare, protections, and basic human rights are being stripped away at an escalating rate. And closer to home, we're seeing on the ground that they're wanting to do that here too, but we're gonna fight it every step of the way. In Queensland, we feel the heat rising as the state attempts to replicate the same bullshit here, starting, of course, with attacks on trans kids' access to gender-affirming care under the guise of protecting the youth. Yet when trans youth are actually at risk of harm from violence, the violence of a cishet transphobic society and the violence perpetuated in transphobic family homes that leads to an overrepresentation of our young people being unhoused and then at further risk of violence on the streets, the state's apparent concern is nowhere to be found. In fact, for homeless trans folks in metropolitan Melbourne of all ages, the state is dishing out additional layers of repression and persecution through cruel local governments in the 9 inner city councils, referring to themselves as M9, who are hell-bent on further gentrifying the inner suburbs by targeting people who are homeless. We're seeing that happen here in the city of Melbourne. We're seeing it happen over Footscray Way in city of Maribyrnong, where they recently moved rough sleepers out of Footscray Park, where they were sheltering. And on Vixen Street Project, I work with street-based sex workers in St Kilda, as a former street-based sex worker myself, many of whom are trans femmes, and most of whom are sleeping rough. They bear the brunt of stigma, abuse, and harassment on all sides, like so many of us experiencing intersecting marginalizations in different aspects of our lives. As a former street-based sex worker myself, I know only too well how street-based sex workers are seen as easy, potential victims by predators who wish to cause harm. We've been historically vulnerable due to our work's criminalized status in the past and its continuation now. This vulnerability still remains while street-based sex workers are still subject to partial criminalization of our work, as laws still dictate when and where we can work legally on the street. When decriminalization of sex work came in throughout 2022 to 2023, or as we call it, Decrim Lite, one of the intended benefits was to remove barriers to sex workers' abilities to reporting crimes committed against us to the police. And the testimony of street-based sex workers, including myself, was used as compelling evidence to convince politicians to vote this legislative change through. However, many barriers still remain for street-based sex workers to be able to access any kind of justice for the crimes committed against us. And similarly for migrant sex workers, which I know some of my good friends and comrades here are going to be talking to you about later. While the cops remain as regulators of our industry, they continue to dehumanize our community and see us as potential criminals rather than members of the community they are supposedly meant to serve and protect. For street-based sex workers with multiple intersecting levels of oppression, such as those who are trans and queer, those who are First Nations, migrants or other people of color, and people who are subject to criminalization in additional aspects of their life because they use drugs, because they've been incarcerated, and or because they're sleeping rough, even more barriers exist to getting any kind of justice from police, who are much more likely to harass, intimidate, or abuse people with these lived experiences rather than respond adequately to the few peers who manage to overcome the existing barriers to reporting crimes committed against us, or who even think that it's worth walking through the door in the first place. On the street recently, community has spoken of escalating violence from ugly mugs, as well as disgusting local residents who come down specifically with the intention to harass and abuse the street-based sex worker and unhoused community in St. Kilda. Much of this violence has been directed at trans street-based sex workers and black street-based sex workers. And for trans workers, they encounter disgusting transphobia layered on top of the whorephobia experienced by their cishet peers on the street. For street-based sex workers who are sleeping rough, this brutality on the street does not end when they finish working. Unhoused peers have reported they're often too fearful to sleep alone at night due to the violence directed by locals and others who come down at people sleeping rough. Some peers describe walking around all night with their stuff or teaming up with each other to take shifts sleeping and looking out for each other to avoid being spat on, assaulted, or even set on fire in their sleep, which has happened to one unhoused man in St. Kilda last year. While much of the violence aimed at people sleeping rough in the city of Port Phillip is spontaneous and opportunistic, there are local residents and traders who are organized as fuck and who are intentionally unleashing a targeted campaign of harassment on unhoused people in the area, coordinated by disgusting Facebook groups where they stalk, photograph, and post about individuals who are forced to live their lives visibly in the public eye because they have no access to the privacy of a home. They compound this abuse with state violence by relentlessly calling the cops and local council on the peers they choose to target. And the flames of this stigma is being only further stoked by the cowardly City of Port Phillip Council and disgusting St. Kilda Police. City of Port Phillip are escalating their persecution of unhoused members of the community to pander to a vocal minority of malicious residents, traders, and homeowners, backed up fiercely by the cops. A few weeks ago, I received word from City of Port Phillip Council that their community consultation period for feedback on a disturbing new local law amenity draft plan has opened for 3 weeks, and that ends tomorrow on March 29th. The proposed amendment to their amenity law will give more powers to the council's local law officers to harass, move on, and confiscate belongings of unhoused folks. If this draft plan is put into action, it will create devastating outcomes for street-based sex workers and trans folks living on the street, which right now is the overwhelming majority of street-based peers I have contact with on Street Project. Despite Vixen working really hard last December on a campaign organizing with unhoused members of the street-based sex worker community and broader unhoused community to ensure their voices were reflected in community consultation, we provided submissions to council on the originally proposed draft plan, worked with Southside Justice and other orgs focused on responding to homelessness, protested along the Homeless People's Union, Rahu, Vic Socialists, the Greens and other allies. But it was gutting when the council voted against the voices of lived experience and instead voted for the worst possible outcome for peers. The proposed amendment they're taking feedback on right now involves much broader definitions than the original plan, meaning it's going to negatively impact even more unhoused trans folks and street-based sex workers than we had originally feared, with a policy likely to result in move-ons, harassment, confiscation of essential belongings, and increasing contact with cops. The current law change proposal would bring in a new power for the council's local law offices to create what they describe as no encampment areas in Port Phillip. This would affect where a person is on council land, a road or a footpath, is present with the apparent intention of sleeping or camping there, or has been sleeping or camping there, and is in possession of so-called encampment equipment, which is basically survival items, at locations where the council thinks an encampment is causing problems with amenity or health and safety. And why would they think that it's causing those issues? Because of these on their little St Kilda residence group who are contacting them day in, day out, sometimes six times in one day, to make them think that there's issues in these spaces where there's literally fucking not. The draft law defines encampment equipment as including a mattress, a tent, a shelter, whether even made of cardboard or anything else, or other items like sleeping bags intended or adapted to allow for sleeping or camping. This is so fucking broad, it could include any unhoused person sat down for a moment with a sleeping bag or a piece of cardboard under their butt to keep themselves off the cold and the wet of the ground. This power would allow local law officers to demand that people sleeping on council land could be asked to leave after receiving offers of assistance. Then if the unhoused person refuses to pack up all the stuff and leave, or if they leave their belongings unattended for even a moment, whether to go to a doctor's appointment, get a feed, have a shower, their equipment could be impounded. The council, when asked, has stated there's no specified amount of time that they'll hold the items for before throwing them away, and they may even charge a fee for getting your shit back. But they assured us that they'll intend to waive them if someone's experiencing hardship. How incredibly noble of them. Can you tell me who is sleeping rough and is not experiencing hardship? Unhoused peers in Port Phillip have already shared with Vixen their own dehumanising experiences of being frequently moved on from council land, having their belongings confiscated by invasive daily local law patrols that wake them up at 6 a.m. with no explanation of how to get their stuff back, and with no offers of assistance or alternative accommodation being made. And this is happening right now before any additional powers have been introduced by the proposed local law change. Unhoused peers are already telling us that confiscation of their vital survival items is the first step taken by this council, not at all a last resort. While the council claims, oh, don't stress, this is not move on orders, in practice, being told to move everything you have does act as a move on order, or your few worldly belongings are going to be stolen. Peers have already reported that this punitive approach makes daily survival so much harder. Being deprived of items that provide shelter and warmth is a matter of life and death, especially for the many street-based sex workers and trans unhoused people who live with disabilities and chronic health conditions. For a council that claims to be committed to a trauma-informed approach and upholding human rights, this proposed local law change violates the human right to shelter. When asked, what about our rights? What about First Nations homeless people? They said, oh, don't stress. We have a reconciliation action plan, and we'll make sure that our local law officers have had diversity training to be culturally appropriate. Like, why don't they do a little acknowledgement of country before stealing people's shit on the land they've already stolen? Public consultation has confirmed that the majority of the community are not even in favour of changing local laws. But despite this, the council seems to be absolutely hell-bent on prioritising the wishes of a vocal minority of homeowners and traders, backed by the St Kilda cops themselves, who themselves are calling for this power to enable a harsher, more punitive approach to the issue of homelessness. This approach focuses on the symptom of rough sleeping and not the underlying drivers of homelessness. It conflates rich people's discomfort with having to see poor people visible in their area with so-called issues of community safety and amenity. What we're hearing from peers over and over again is, where the fuck do they want us to go? Peers are on council land, on roads and footpaths, and empty lots because they know if they are on public land, the cops get called. Like, not public, what's it called? Private land, private homeowners and private landowners will call the cops. So peers are forced into car parks and shit like that. Nobody wants to be sleeping there. Everybody would rather be in a house. But there are no fucking houses because they're not putting money into this and because we're seeing public housing stock be slashed and sold off and privatised to developers. The council's own community safety roundtable concluded in its final report that existing local laws are adequate and don't need to be amended in order to enhance any kind of community safety or amenity. Peers with living experience of sleeping rough have shared the importance of sleeping together in groups to protect particularly against gendered violence. The targeted disbandment of specific so-called encampments not only stigmatizes people experiencing homelessness and reduces their capacity to keep each other safe while sleeping on the street, but it disproportionately harms Aboriginal communities who have always valued the right to gather as a cultural need.
You're listening to 3CR, and that was an excerpt from Rory's speech. Rory is a peer support worker with Vixen, and they were speaking at Saturday's Trans Day of Vengeance. And thank you again to Hannah from Monday Breakfast for the recording. You can follow Vixen on Instagram at VixenWorkers or go to vixen.org.au to support their work. We are now joined by Lucy Chinganya, who is the current University of Melbourne Student Union President, Hanson Scholar and Biomedicine student. She is a dedicated advocate for students on campus with a focus on advocating for equity, representation and community well-being. Lucy is on the program this morning to discuss demands, calling for the University of Melbourne to scrap its indoor protest ban. Welcome to 3CR, Lucy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us to talk about this. It's quite a serious story or issue that we're talking about this morning in terms of banning indoor protest activity. So I was wondering if you could start by giving our listeners a bit of context of how the University of Melbourne came to this conclusion and came to ban, make this ban.
Yeah. So last year, the first day of semester, the university decided to introduce a new rule restricting protest activity on campus, particularly for indoor protests, without consulting any students or any staff. And so there's been a real concern that this changes like how students can express themselves and engage in activism, especially after the huge activism that we've seen in 24 after the student union encampments and protests and all that sort of thing representing pro-Palestinian voices.
Yeah, it does seem like there is a direct correlation to what was happening there. You know, when we saw incredible mobilisation of UniMelb students on campus who opposed the genocide in Palestine, you were saying that there was no consultation with staff or students in that regard. I was wondering, as a student union president, what was your reaction to receiving this news, or how has it been discussing with your peers and fellow students about this ban?
It was incredibly shocking to me to see that they didn't even try to consult the students. I mean, the student union is the peak representative voice of all students on campus, and student activism isn't new at the University of Melbourne. We've been doing it for decades. And so for them to impose a rule rather than discussing it with students and staff just was ridiculous, I think.
Mm. And did they give any reason for banning indoor protests?
They are trying to claim it's got to do with safety, and no one's going to argue with that safety is important, but safety shouldn't be used to justify shutting down peaceful protests. Like, you can absolutely have both.
Mm. Yeah, and we know that university is, like you said, it has such a rich history of protesting and student activism, not just in the last few years, but for decades. And, yeah, I was reading that the university is prohibiting any protest that, quote, unreasonably disrupts its operations. Were they able to explain what that meant or clarify any of their wording?
No, unfortunately, the policy is quite vague. And the thing is, protests can be disruptive. That's often the point. But they should still be peaceful and respectful, and that's definitely what we're aiming to do. And the issue is, like, making sure they're not restricted to the point that they become meaningless.
Mm. Yeah. And so I've seen that there have been several groups on campus who are opposing this. The coalition includes the Student Union, National Union of Students, Human Rights Law Center, and many others. I was wondering if you could talk about the letter that was produced to the interim vice chancellor and what your demands are.
Yes. So we formed a group together to write to the vice chancellor that we want a meaningful consultation with students and staff, and that the policies that they create support both safety and the right to peaceful protest. And we want that to look like working with our student representatives and implementing recommendations from the things like the UniMail racism report, and not just introducing those blanket restrictions on protests, but really engaging with the student community on how we can best support them with this policy.
Mm. And has there been any sort of response from the university to your letter, or any attempt at reaching out?
At current, there's not been a response to our letter. Consultation is open. However, there's questions on how they're going to use the feedback, because at the moment, the way the consultation is working is there's an email address that you can send all your feedback to, but not really clear on how is that feedback being used, how is it going to be implemented, and how are we going to make sure this is a transparent process for everybody involved.
Mm. And so if there are students listening or staff from the University of Melbourne, anyone who is connected to the university in any way who has very strong feelings about this and would like to share their perspective, is there any way that they can go about this with the university?
Yes, there is, especially since students have always played such a strong role in shaping universities for the better. I would encourage any students listening to go to the policy consultation website on UniMelb and send an email to the Vice-Chancellor on that email address and let them know how you feel about these protest restrictions.
Mm. And I was wondering if you could just talk a bit about the role of the student union in promoting student voice and activism, and how, I guess, these bans and the very vague wording will impact the work that you do.
Yeah, there's been a long tradition of students protesting at the University of Melbourne. We've seen, like, way back in 1939, students were fighting to keep the university open in response to the Second World War. And the University of Melbourne students also, in, like, the 90s, provided refuge for East Timorese refugees. Like, we've been doing protests for so long. And so now with these new restrictions, it feels like the university, which is meant to be a space where people can challenge ideas and authority, is just being shut down. And you really can't claim to support free speech while restricting how students express it.
Mm.
And so that's really felt like the banning protests doesn't really create safety, but instead shuts down such important conversations.
Yeah, and then if we, I guess, look at this issue in the broader context of what's happening in our cities across so-called Australia with restrictions on protests, outdoor gatherings, and, for example, Queensland banning the phrase "from the river to the sea." I was wondering if you could just talk about, yeah, the current climate that we're seeing here regarding the silencing of people who want to be heard.
Yeah, the current silencing, especially what we've seen in Queensland, has been quite scary. And the fears of it coming to Melbourne has been made apparent in my community a lot. And it just feels like we're not actually addressing the roots of the problems. We're instead shutting down those voices, which is so, like, we've been describing it as authoritarian, because we need to be addressing what the actual issue is and not allowing the space for students to talk about big issues and big problems like this just continues to perpetuate the issue. And I think the university isn't doing enough to ensure that we have the right to talk about these kind of things. Like, as a black, like, woman in the university, there's a couple decades ago where I couldn't even be in the position that I am. And the only reason that's happened is because of protest. So protest has been so important and effective in the university space. Shutting that down loses a core part of who we are.
Mm. Yeah, I really love that. And I just want to echo what you said just now of shutting down student voices doesn't really solve anything and perhaps just perpetuates or worsens the issues for many people. I guess what are next steps for you, Lucy, in your role as union president and as part of this broader coalition who opposes these laws? What will you, what are you keeping an eye on next when it comes to the University of Melbourne's response to this?
I'm definitely keeping an eye on what their response is and all of that feedback. I'm pushing for the university to be really transparent in their processes and to let us know what was the kind of feedback they received, like everything, how they implemented that into the process, and making sure that they are actually talking to the student union about decisions they're making that affect students. That should always be the bottom line, and the fact that this policy was made without that, we want to make sure that never happens again.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Lucy. It'll be interesting to see how the University of Melbourne responds, and perhaps we can have you on the show again when we get some sort of response. But for now, we really appreciate your time on the show this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been speaking to Lucy Chinganya, who is the current University of Melbourne Student Union President, Hanson Scholar and Biomedicine Student. And she was just on the show to talk about UniMelb's, banning of indoor protest and how this will impact student voice on campus. We are now going to go to a song.
Yeah, up next we have Everything You Are, a cover by Nada Keroncong Indonesia. Keroncong is a unique, classical, colonial-influenced Indonesian musical genre that first developed in the Javanese islands, especially around the port cities of Sunda Kelapa. The original song, Everything You Are, was written and performed by Indonesian singer-songwriter Hindia.
Beat down by Sometimes I wanna fold, namun suratmu kan ku ceritakan ke anak-anakku nanti bahwa aku pernah dicintai. With everything you are, fully as I am.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and just before you heard Everything You Are by Nada Karonchong, Indonesia.
Today in this studio, we have Nazanin, an Iranian feminist speaking out against injustice within Iran, here today for part two of an interview that was conducted 2 weeks ago. Nazanin is here today to discuss with us more of the work that she and others are acting on in resistance against war crimes and human rights violations that are ongoing in Iran. Nazanin is also part of a feminist group here in Nam called Feminist in Melbourne, a group of artists and activists fighting for freedom in Iran, for Iran. Just a pre-warning for listeners, some of this content may contain discussion around sexual abuse and violence. Please take care while listening. Thank you so much for returning to the studio, Naz.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. I'm glad that you're here again to talk with us. So yeah, because last 2 weeks ago we didn't really get to ask. I didn't get to have the chance to ask you more about the resistance work that you're doing.
Yeah.
Yes. So could you tell me more about Feminista now?
Yeah, so to be honest, disclaimer, it's called Feminista Melbourne because it was part of an international collective initially. Okay. It started as Feminista Berlin and then other cities adapted it, so that's why it has that name. Can't change it anymore, unfortunately. It's like registered so many places. Yeah. But yes, Feminista Norm, I think, would be a much better name. Anyway, I found like that basically streets and our collective, people going to a public space and talking about their lived experience, the issues that they're concerned about, and what's happening worldwide, very powerful conversations. And 3 years ago, after the death of Mahsa Jinnah Amini, the Iranian community organized a lot of protests. We even had like multiple protests a week for the beginning of it. And I noticed that every time after people would have left the street, there was no sign left that we were ever there. I think Melbourne has got really good at kind of like diverting traffic when there is a protest, cleaning up after a protest, removing all the signs of it. So that's when I started doing graffiti. It was me and a couple of my other friends, and Hosier Lane has been a really good place for it. And, you know, continued doing that ever since. A lot of the pieces that we painted depicted images of people who died in Iran. I think that was because that was our cause. And that was our reason for working. Right now, I feel the situation is way more complicated than just one image, one sentence cannot grasp the nuance of it, the complexity of it.
Also, sorry, just to clarify, so this is the murals in on Hosier Lane.
Yes, Hosier Lane. Yeah, a lot of it on Hosier Lane because a lot of people see that.
Yeah, exactly.
Have done work in other places too.
Yeah.
There is one permanent mural as a result of works of our collective that's on the north wall of Brunswick Baths. It's dedicated to Gina Amini, and that's the only permanent piece. Everything else has been ephemeral.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, okay. And so, yeah, I mean, could you tell me more about the murals and like the messages that they sort of convey and why they are important for?
Yeah, I think like, you know, each piece has been different. The ones we did in since January when the Iranian protests in Iran started end of last year, massacring 7th and 8th of January, and then continued round of arrests about that. A lot of the pieces that I did this time around were actually a continuation of works of other graffiti artists in Iran, because the government in Iran shut down the internet from 7th of January. So a lot of the graffiti artists that I was following on social media, I had no idea if they're still alive or not. One of the pieces that actually has stayed in Hosier Lane up to last time I checked, it was 2 days ago, but yeah, I have gone back and repainted it. It's from Mirza, a really famous, well-known graffiti artist in Iran. Depicts a woman holding the body of a child, all in red, and that was the last piece he posted before the internet shut down in January. Another piece is the last tag of Naqsh, Umida Molai. He was 24 years old graffiti artist that was killed in the protest in January in Iran. So some of the pieces have been continuation of the voices of my people, my community, that I no longer have a way to communicate with them because of the internet shutdown.
Yeah, I see. Wow. So it's a way of like communicating things that are otherwise hidden.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really important. And yeah, they're very impactful. Very, very impactful, yeah, like visuals. And I feel like it's a good way for people who, even like tourists or just people, to sort of research what's going
on. Yeah, we do get a lot of interactions. Sometimes it's been curiosity, sometimes it's been judgment, less often than the curiosity version. And actually, I wanted to tell you about a story of the judgment part of it. This is something that just happened yesterday. Someone that I knew in real life, someone that maybe one day I would have called them a comrade. Yesterday had a whole attack on me on social media, on my posts and direct messages. It honestly felt like it came out of nowhere. And under one of my posts, which was about safety of a female graffiti artist in Hosier Lane, they posted essentially saying, where is the artwork about the schoolgirls in the Minab primary school who were killed by the American airstrike on the first day of this war? They didn't pay attention that that work was much older. I'm talking about a different issue. Unfortunately, haven't had a chance to do that many works since the war started. And for some reason, they were holding me accountable personally, that I have to cover all aspects of what's happening in our region. That's just not possible and conceivable for any human being. And I just replied back and said, well, you can go and paint one. Fortunately, places like Hosier Lane and so many other lanes, anyone can go. Hosier Lane is the only legal one, though. Everywhere else, it has more risk. But we can't really follow this culture of expecting perfection from every other person's activism. Each of us have limitations, time, energy, resources, all that. And instead of attacking each other, why can't we add to one another's work? I honestly, the images that came out of the school in Minab has been horrifying, but unfortunately, those school kids have not been the only ones killed by the Islamic Republic, by the war, by different sides of this whole war going on. And don't have the ability to produce works about children. It really crushes me. And every time I have looked at those images, I couldn't function. That's why I didn't do a work about them. Maybe I will do it in future. But the same thing, basically, I was trying to communicate 2 weeks ago. When we get into this mindset of shutting down conversation, when the war and the brutality of the Islamic Republic regime in Iran is much more greater than any of us individually can conceive, we are just doomed to fail. I don't see a path of success through this kind of like behavior.
Yeah, I think it's such a complicated issue, and it's just, yeah, really tragic on all sides of it. I think obviously the assassination of Ayatollah Khamenei has created this war, but also an awareness of what was already happening in Iran. So I think it goes
either
ways in some ways.
You know, like, honestly, about the awareness, us Iranians, we have been living with the complexity and the power of Islamic Republic for a very long time. Also, our community does follow so many things happening in America, so many things happening in Israel, other countries, because their decisions about how to deal with Iran always affected our daily lives. So on a scale, I already see the aspects of how the propaganda of the Islamic Republic, of America, of Israel, of this country, of that country, of France, works, was already known to so many Iranians. And now I'm coming across people who are active in the leftist scene of Melbourne, and people that I have gone to protest with them, people who, like, you know, came to my home and I gave them Persian tea and cookies and all that. So real people in my life that are acting so shocked when we're telling them, hey, like, you know, this is what the Islamic Republic did. You see Handmaid's Tale? Like, multiply that by 100. That's what we're dealing with. You see Abu Ghraib? Like, that's the type of torture they inflicted on their own people for years. So that, like, you know, saying that the death of the last supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, is bringing people's question, but they're coming to the conversation with already made up their mind and their judgment, is not a productive path, I feel.
Yeah. Well, we only have a few minutes left of the interview, but I guess my last question would be, what is it that we can do to help what's happening in Iran? And
keep your hearts open. Don't let the horrific images coming out of Middle East make you numb to the atrocities and people's death. Not even for a second think that this is a simple story. Not even honestly, it is complicated, and try to diversify your sources of information as much as you can. And also be curious, be open, listen, and try to learn more. There is already a really big knowledge gap between the Iranian community and people who are coming into learning about the regime in Iran more recently. So try to be humble and be curious, and don't expect perfection from anybody, but help us. Help me. If I did something wrong, if you have a better idea, come and collaborate. I'm really open to it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good way to create pieces, to have conversations, to hear all sides of the narrative, and conversations and asking the questions is so important. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me
again. Yeah, thank you for coming on again. Yes, thank you. So we've been speaking with Naz, an Iranian feminist advocating for women's rights in Iran. For more information on how to reach out to Naz or to get involved with the resistance, you can visit the Feminist in Nam Instagram or the website, which we will be linking in the podcast notes. You're listening to 3CR.
The state Labor government has begun works on demolishing Melbourne's 44 public housing towers to be replaced with private housing. Already, hundreds of residents have been displaced, often into unsuitable homes under duress.
The towers on Racecourse Road, Flemington, have become Homes Victoria work sites, while the families still living in the buildings are being treated appallingly.
Join Save Public Housing supporters in solidarity with residents.
Weekdays 7:30 till 9 a.m. as we engage with passing traffic to make some noise and show Jacinta Allen
that the demolition of public housing is unacceptable. Signs and banners provided or bring your own.
There's power in numbers, so see you at 120 Racecourse Road, Flemington, 7:30 till 9 a.m.
Save Public Housing is a 3CR supporter.
Keffiyehs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white keffiyeh to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to keffiyehs.org.au. That's keffiyehs.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
I Plus Pride Victoria is a not-for-profit organisation dedicated to equality and justice for multigender attracted people, including bi, pan, regardless of label, or no label at all. We organise community events and advocate for better policies and services. I Plus Pride runs discussion groups which offer a safe and fun space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your sexual identity, and provide peer support. I Plus Pride is especially keen to hear from multigender attracted people in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to I Plus Pride are tax deductible. For more information, visit our website at biplusprideVic.org.au, email info@biplusprideVic.org.au, or find us on Facebook or Instagram.
A 3CR supporter.
I'm bisexual.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and up next we're going to jump over to Juliet and Shuan on the lines.
Good morning, everyone. And yes, we're about to be joined by Shuan, who runs Amplify Bookstore, which specialises in stocking books by BIPOC authors based here in Naarm. Amplify aims to help readers diversify their bookshelves and to tackle issues of representation in the publishing industry. Trent previously joined us on Tuesday Breakfast back in December 2024 and is here to discuss what Amplify has been up to in the past year, their expanding events calendar and some book recommendations. Welcome back to Tuesday Breakfast, Trent.
Hi, happy to be here.
Thanks so much for getting up early and making time for us. To start off, could you, for those who haven't heard of Amplify, could you give us a quick rundown about the bookstore?
Yeah, I think you summarised it pretty well, but Amplify is basically an anti-racist social enterprise bookstore based in West Melbourne. We are located at 55 Peel Street. We started online in 2020 and have since expanded to our first bricks and mortar store in November of 2024.
Yeah, awesome. And for those who maybe don't know where West Melbourne is, the bookstore is right across from Queen Vic Market, so in a very convenient location. Since you've started the bricks and mortar store, the bookstore's really grown in the last year. So could you tell us what you've been up to in 2025 and the start of 2026?
Yeah, we spent most of 2025 settling into the space. This would have been our first time being in-person booksellers, so that transition was something that we wanted to take our time with. Going from online to in-person is like two totally different ballgames. We spent most of the year chatting with our community and looking for more way to service them. And in 2026, we're looking to do that by expanding our events calendar to include monthly community events.
Yeah, awesome. And yeah, I've been seeing on your Instagram, there's been a lot of new events added to the calendar, particularly in recent months. Could you tell us a bit about some of those new events that Amplify is running?
Yeah, so we decided to launch these community events that are meant to be incredibly accessible and sort of cute, cozy events where members of our community can come by and, you know, you can make friends or meet new people. Our community events calendar is on a quarterly rotation of monthly events. So we start with a crafting workshop. This quarter we're doing origami, followed by a sort of like chattier event. So we do speed dating and singles night. That will happen in May. And in June, we'll be doing book swap. We're also hosting a huge variety and a lot more launches at the shop this year. We've got Anita Heiss coming by tonight to launch her new novel, The Paradise Pact, and Maithri Vijayasekara tomorrow to launch The Witch Without Memory, which is the follow-up to her best-selling fantasy novel, The Prince Without Sorrow.
Oh, exciting. Yeah, I think that's really an exciting step to have book launches happening in the space. And it sounds like a really wonderful kind of calendar of events catering to a lot of different interests in the community. And through running these events, what are you sort of aiming to create? What sort of space do you want to make for people?
We're looking to create a safe space for our community, which comprises mostly of BIPOC readers and folks. Creating that sort of safe space is really important for us to ensure that they, you know, have somewhere to go where they don't feel judged and they feel safe and seen and they can meet other sort of like-minded people. Amplify by itself, you know, based off what we do, really attracts, you know, a certain crowd, like, and they're all relatively like-minded. And so in this day and age where everyone is, you know, lonely and looking for ways to connect, coming to the bookstore, which is a really, like, cozy space, and coming to an event that, you know, is $15, there's no pressure to have any form of alcohol, every event is sober, really helps sort of build that safe, trusting space that people can come to without having to, you know, spend a heap time of money or get drunk, which is like the two things one must do to go out in this day and age in Melbourne.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, it is really important to, you know, have events that are very accessible and, that people can feel like they can come along to and there's not this big barrier to entry. And I know, yeah, probably the event that I've seen advertised quite a lot and that seems to be a key part of that is the Amplify Book Club. And can you tell us a bit about how the book club works and, maybe what the upcoming book clubs are going to focus on?
Yeah, so book club is a space for thought-provoking, insightful conversations about books. It's cozy and reflective and a safe space for all readers. We launched it late last year, and it is held on the last Thursday of every month, and we rotate between fiction and non-fiction each month. So this month we did Biting Back from the First Nations Classic series by UQP, and next month we're doing Exophony by Yoko Tawada. Tickets are on our website, and it includes some snacks and a non-alcoholic drink. It's held in our reading room upstairs, so it's just like a really chill, well, cozy space where everyone can gather and freely sort of express their thoughts. It's very non-judgmental, and we care a lot of our community safety, so if you ever need a moment, you can step out. We've got a balcony that's accessible if the weather's nice, or they can go downstairs. It's just like a really sort of gentle way to spend your night.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds, yeah, really cozy, as you said, and, provides that non-judgmental space to get to enjoy literature with other people. And, yeah, speaking of books, could you give us some recommendations of, books that you've read recently that you'd like to recommend?
Yeah, so we're launching this tomorrow, which is The Witch Without Memory. I read The Witch Without Memory and The Prince Without Sorrow back to back, and I absolutely love it. It is a historical fantasy inspired by South Asian history. It includes witches, political intrigue, and the sort of moral question of if violence is ever necessary, or when is violence necessary, or even encouraged. Another book that we have been absolutely loving here at Amplify is Kira Millwood Hargrave's Almost Life. It's a soul-crushing queer romance that will make you want to book a one-way ticket to France in a good way. Just like we've sold so many copies, it came out this month. And we are so excited to have a new book by Kiran, who we've been stalking since the beginning of Amplify.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to add both of those books to our reading list. And I know there's quite a few other new releases coming out in the next few months, and you guys have been doing like a new releases post each month. Do you have any other suggestions for April?
Yeah, April's not arrived yet. It's going to arrive sometime. Well, actually today, I think. Weirdly enough, everything's been coming out of the end of the month for the next month this year. How the calendar falls. But some of the really exciting books coming out. We've got Strange Buildings, which is the follow-up to the best-selling Strange Pictures and Strange Houses. It came in 2 weeks ago, and it is like the perfect quick read with a side of a chilling puzzle to uncover. So you're given a bunch of strange buildings, and you are the detective having to solve the puzzle. If you're after fun holiday romance, Anita Heiss's The Paradise Pact, which we're launching tonight, is definitely one that you're going to want to reach for. It's just like, you know, heartwarming, fun, chill. Sometimes, and a lot of times, people come into the shop asking for a fun read that is sort of low impact, I guess. And this is definitely one of that. For an April release, we've got My Dear You, which is a collection of speculative short stories. It's playful, it's richly inquisitive, and it explores the connections that define us. Very, very much a book that you're going to read and it's going to stay with you. The stories are so weird and so wacky, and they sort of remind me of a lot of the movies that have come out recently. So I think if you've been a huge movie buff as well, you're going to want to reach for My Dear You.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing those recommendations. And sounds like there's a lot to look forward to in the new releases. And finally, how can listeners find out more about Amplify? Where should they head to?
Yeah, you can come to our shop and visit us. We are at 55 Peel Street in West Melbourne, right above the Queen Vic Market. Or you can follow us online at Amplify Bookstore. We're all at Amplify Bookstore across Instagram or TikTok.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ren. And we really appreciate you coming on early in the morning and chatting to us about, all the wonderful things happening at Amplify.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, you're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and we've been speaking to Shren from Amplify about upcoming events at the bookstore and book releases to watch out for in the coming months. And you can find out more at amplifybookstore.com or at Amplify Bookstore on Instagram.
Thank you so much, Juliet and Shuan. Really looking forward to checking out some of those recommendations. So I have been to Amplify. It is a great bookstore, and it's really impressive to actually see what a bookstore could look like if it purely just centered BIPOC authors. I think that's like a very empowering space to be in. Up next, we have a song for you. This is a newly released song by Omnia Al-Tahir, who teamed up with Mori and Sudanese group Rap Shar3 to create this blues rock politically charged song called Aza.
Mm-hmm. listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and that was Aza by Omniati Al-Tahir. Highly, highly recommend checking out the full song. Up next, we'll be hearing from Slumby speaking at the Trans Day of Vengeance. Earlier in the program, we played a speech by Rory at Trans Day of Vengeance held outside the State Library on Saturday, 28th of March. To wrap up today's show, we're going to share with you Slumby's speech from the event. In this address, Slumby connects liberation and justice for trans people to other struggles in the world, including the fight against colonialism and white supremacy. She also speaks to the importance of organizing by and for the community, and ends her speech by calling on everyone to imagine and organize community-run gender-affirming care. Here's Slumby.
On the one hand, in the last few years, there's now more spaces than ever where we don't have to fight to be there. Literally for the first time in my life, the last couple of years, I found myself in some spaces like queer spaces of music and dance, or just social spaces where I look around and I'm like, okay, like everything is, you know, I'm a community organizer, so I'm always looking for like, what are the tasks that need to be done? Like, where could we make some improvements? And sometimes now I look around and there's nothing really that can be improved. Like, things are going pretty well, and I feel like I belong. Which wasn't always like that. There was a time when there were queer Facebook groups that were actively trans exclusionary. That was only like 9 years ago in this city. And so many events now and social spaces are trans inclusive by default, which is a massive win. And I don't think we celebrate or even see and acknowledge the successes and the things that have changed and improved over time, anywhere near enough. And there's also an avalanche of trans events and mutual aid that flows freely. Like, it used to be that trans women tried to do a mutual aid fund or a fundraiser for gender affirming surgery or something, and they'd get cancelled for not doing it in the right way, or for being too entitled to mobilize their social capital or whatever reason. And now we see mutual aid funds and fundraisers happen, and they're just, you can do that. That's a thing that you can do now. I see so many people coming out as well. I see us widening the scope of possibility for a queer life or a feminine life or girlhood and womanhood, or boyhood and manhood that's different and liberatory. For everyone around us, I see the waves of gender liberation washing over everyone, the whole of society, and it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever had the privilege to witness. And on the other hand, even though life as a trans femme is more possible than ever, I have to work so much harder to stay in it than my cis compatriots. And that extra struggle and tenuous existence and presence is so rarely acknowledged or accounted for in community, in friendships, and scarcely in organizations and services, which we'll return to in a moment. I'm struggling to find a job or make life work on the dole. My identity documents don't match my gender, and there are places I can't travel to where even friends seem oblivious of the risks. I'm forced to pretend to be a boy in many interactions to stay safe, and every space I carve out a life for myself within is intruded upon by cis people who can just step in unencumbered and unfazed, as though the art, the practice, the joy that I cultivate for myself and my community isn't precious, fragile, and special. Often I wonder if we need the harshness of militant transness to flourish again. Not that it ever totally went away. But it used to be much more prevalent. Or perhaps to break through the cis-sexist fictions that still installed out of habit. Or if maybe perhaps that work to make a trans life will soon not be understood as an abstract idea, but respected and accounted for collectively. I see beautiful things like the celebration of transness and queer femininity in Alicia Liu, while knowing that we may never get to witness a trans girl ice skater, and not hearing anyone talk about that fact. In the realm of feminine joy, there is no discussion of how trans girls and women are banned from the Olympics, or how it is trans femininity that's created the space for transgressive cis femininity. I think it's this obliviousness or the silence that is so isolating, that we must explain over and over and over, that while we've fought for our queer families and communities and spaces to be trans inclusive, that doesn't mean that the world is. It means those spaces are often all we have, not just places to find belonging and joy, but places where we can live as people. There's many places in the world where trans and gender diverse people have faced and survived apocalypse. And I know to many of us it might seem like we're on the precipice of apocalypse. And this is always in tandem with colonialism and white supremacy. The richness of the world's gender cultures and full diversity of human genders have been so severely undermined that many of us don't even know a world outside the cis patriarchal Western binary gender system even exists. But it does, and it survives and it resists all over the world. In response to our collective reclaiming of that diversity of life, the flourishing of transness, there are attempts to reassert the processes of genocide upon our communities. And this is most widely documented in real time at the moment in the United States, but absolutely isn't exclusive to the US, where over 400,000 transgender people have been forced to move in the last year or so. And the Lemkin Institute for Genocide Prevention has recently released its third red flag alert, raising concerns about escalating legal and political persecution of transgender and gender expansive and intersex people in the United States, and how that constitutes an early phase of genocide. And they come for trans kids the most. Indeed, here in Australia, it's the policies attacking trans kids that have been the few to get through, notably in Queensland and the Northern Territory. Because they want to force trans children to undergo puberty and bodily changes that so many of us never made it through, that I was lucky to make it through, to allow the state and patriarchal family to control people's bodies. Because a world in which people have autonomy and agency and choice over their bodies is simply too empowering, liberatory, and commensurate with life. And here we see so many of the connections between movements against white supremacy and colonialism, feminism, migrant struggles with the border regime, all are present within the trans community. Because we often sit at some of the worst coal faces in each of these struggles. And obviously lots of things there that can be picked up on, like the struggle for trans liberation, for gender liberation, is a struggle that feminism needs to get behind, that cis feminism needs to get behind, that white feminism needs to get behind. Because we create the space that undermines misogyny and patriarchy. You know, trans misogyny isn't just a trans thing, it's misogyny. And everywhere that trans misogyny happens, it just creates more fuel for misogyny to happen to all women within society. I also wanted to mention that it's a shame to see LGBTIQA plus state-funded organisations failing to support community action continually. It's time that we end the unofficial political affiliations and interference of the Labor Party in NGOs, queer and trans NGOs, and feminist organisations and women's services and health services. We need to bring community back into the centre and back to control of these organisations. And I think it's way more possible than we think it is. We think it's this like abstract concept that's like quite difficult. But actually myself and a few other people got together over the last bunch of years, it might be 5 years now, and started a queer and trans community health service in the Central Deserts. All you need is a space that's willing to rent at the Medicare rate and a few doctors who are willing to bulk bill and devote some of their time during a month to working. And they can get paid the Medicare amount. That's plenty. That's plenty of money. So all you need is a space and some doctors. And I know for a fact that this city has enough doctors who would be willing to sign up to that sort of thing and bulk bill. And I know that there's so many different health services, and many of them are apparently community controlled, receiving state funding, queer and trans services that have spaces. And those spaces need to be put to use and rented out. Why not rent them out for free? Why not let a community controlled queer and trans health service rent a space for free for a few hours a week or a fortnight? And we've also got more queer and trans health workers than ever before. There's so many queer and trans doctors out there now. There is very little stopping us from creating community controlled health services and any other kind of health service that we can think of for the queer and trans community in every state and territory in this continent, in every major city and lots of the smaller ones as well. There's little stopping us doing that except for our imagination and access to information and our sense of possibility and what we feel like we deserve. And I think that's what we need in this moment is more community action and community control, grassroots community action. And then we need to see NGOs, state-funded organizations and services and political parties falling in behind that, falling in behind what community is doing, and let community stay at the center and let community lead the way.
That was Slumby speaking at the Trans Day of Vengeance rally on Saturday, 28 March. Thank you again to Hannah from Monday Breakfast for recording. That's all we have for you today. But before we wrap up, just a few quick announcements about events. Today at 8:45 a.m. at the front of Melbourne Magistrate Court, there will be a vigil and speak out organised by Rising Red Lantern, who are demanding justice for Yuko and other Asian migrant sex workers facing violence and discrimination. If you're thinking of joining, please wear red, which is Yuko's favourite colour, to honour her memory. And a reminder again that it is Trans Day of Audibility today at 3CR. So from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m, there'll be 8 hours of exclusively trans, non-binary and gender diverse programming. And finally, today at 6:30 p.m, there will be a panel at the Resistance Centre on Swanson Street discussing what's behind the illegal US-Israel war on Iran and how we can show support for self-determination in the region. This is organised by Green Left Online, so please do check out their socials for more details. And that's all we have. And we had a jam-packed show this morning, starting with...
At 7:15, we had Rory from Vixen speaking at the Saturday Trans Day of Vengeance. And at 7:30, we were joined by Lushi, Shinguya, current University of Melbourne Student Union President. And at 7:30, we spoke with Nazanin, an Iranian feminist speaking out against injustice within Iran.
And at 8 o'clock, we were joined by Jingxuan Teo from Amplify Bookstore discussing BIPOC authors and their new events calendar. And as you just heard, at 8:15, we wrapped up with a speech by Rory that was shared at the Trans Day of Vengeance held on Saturday. Thank you so much for listening. This is 3CR Tuesday Breakfast.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.